This is the Faherty Podcast presented by Farmers Insurance.
Thank you very much. Thank you for that totally undeserved yet well-rehearsed round of applause. Yes, keep it up, I hope. On the night he won the 145th Open Championship, Henrik Stenson had the rare and wonderful honor of flying in a private jet with me. As they say, to the victors go the spoils. We were going to Switzerland for a charity event for Sergio Garcia, and all throughout the flight, I caught him sneaking disbelieving glimpses of the claret jug as if he was checking to see if it had really happened, if he really was the champion golfer of the year. It was just one of those many pinch-me moments in Henrik's career. After all, in addition to the Open, he's won the Players, both Tour Championships, the FedEx Cup, the Race to Dubai, and an Olympic medal. And now he's notched yet another epic achievement, an appearance on my show.
I met up with Henrik at his home base of Lake Nona, Florida, where his neighbors include Ian Poulter, Graham McDowell, and Justin Rose.
I'm going before because I look better.
Yeah. For those of you keeping score at home, that means you're never less than a quick jog away from 14 Ryder Cup trophies.
Well, I played in one Ryder Cup, you played in five, so that means we played an average of three each. Yeah. The way I look at it.
Yeah, absolutely. I would look at it the same way.
But there's nothing like the sort of energy that you get when you're standing on the first tee at a Ryder Cup. You were out there first with David Howell. What was that feeling like?
Well, the first one for me at the K Club in 2006, of course, very excited to be part of that team. And everyone talked about the first tee nerves, but I didn't feel anything because I'm in the foursomes and I'm giving him the first tee shot.
Oh, he's so got the first tee shot.
I thought it was easy, the first tee shot. I think one of the big keys that we did as the European team with the four players, and I was one of them who didn't play in the morning, in the four balls. Yeah. We all came up with the team and got a little feel for the first tee and saw the morning matches tee right. off. And when Tiger hit a really bad three wood way off to the left in the pond, I think everyone felt like, if he could do that, I hope I'm not going to do worse. So yeah. I think that kind of helped everyone to settle in a little bit. But it's a very intense moment, the first tee at a Ryder Cup, especially given how that has evolved over these last 10, 15 years now with grandstands that we have around the first tee. It's gone from fairly moderate to massive.
The atmosphere is
amazing these days.
Well, so you didn't have that first shot to deal with, but, you know, your putt on the 15th, it kind of sealed it. I mean, you had to have some nerves there.
We had a pretty healthy lead, and everyone was playing good, and it just came down to my match being the one that put the point over. I think Paris was a different animal, I'd say, in the singles. I was definitely focused.
Oh, man, he's got three wins in a row on Bubba to take a commanding three-up lead.
In the Sunday singles match, you're playing Bubba Watson and you managed to beat him 5-4. You had six birdies through 14 holes, no bogeys. What clicked that day?
When I got the draw on the Saturday night when we were driving back to the hotel, I look at the draw and I remember I told Alex, who was in the last group, I said, I wouldn't be surprised if this can come down to the last matches. So my mindset was always that it was going
to
be trying
to
approach
it that way.
You have to think that it's going to be down to your match and you have to take care of your match. And went out and played a really strong last round and managed to get up early and just didn't ease off anything on Bubba.
Hands off, and Bubba Watson succumbs to Stenson, 5-4.
Well, you were undefeated that week and the only other person was Francesco Molinari. You played beautifully that week.
Yeah, and in the foursomes format with Justin, I think it was a couple of really clutch putts that was important to me that Saturday afternoon.
Unbelievable clutch putting continues for Europe, and Stenson delivers again.
That's really important to make those game deciders when they matter the most. I think that gave me a lot of confidence going into the singles as well.
Why is it that we see such extraordinary golf at the Ryder Cup? You know, you see more great shots per capita, if you like, than any other event. What is it, you know, under all that pressure that enables the guys to play so well?
Well, for myself, I think sometimes when you put under real pressure, sometimes that can make you just let go even more and you're just taking dead aim and you just fire at the pin and you hit great shots. I think sometimes pressure can make you actually play freer in a way too.
You miss in 10 and 12. Does that kind of light the fire under you?
Yeah, no question. When you're not teeing it up there in 10 and 12, I feel like someone else got my shirt. You know, I want that back. So yeah. I was certainly motivated to be on that team for 14, and I've been on the three teams since. So, yeah, definitely.
Would you like to be captain someday?
I've always said I'm not going to campaign for it, but I don't think I'll turn it down if that chance gets thrown my way. Looking at my colleagues who are in the similar age brackets, and it's certainly more players than there are Ryder Cups in the next 10 years. So we'll see. We'll be involved in one way or the other, I'm sure.
Are you motivated to make the 2020 team?
Yeah, very much so.
How old will you be?
We don't need to talk about age. I mean, I had a pretty decent match against Phil when he was 46 at Troon, right? So that's what I'm kind of keep on reminding myself of. But I've played 5 Ryder Cups, been on the winning side 3 of them. That's been in Europe. So I feel like I got one box to tick, and that would be winning on away soil. And if I'm going to have that opportunity, I'm seeing that as being the 2021. I'm not sure if I'm seeing many Ryder Cups beyond that as a player, but
I don't know.
We'll see. And if that doesn't happen, I think I can close that Ryder Cup chapter with a 3-for-3 in Paris and a home win. That's not the worst way to go out on.
Stenson shines in the spotlight. Consider the fact that his 6 PGA Tour wins include the richest tournament in the sport, the oldest championship, the biggest match play event, and 2 playoff victories, including the Tour Championship.
The European Tour Race to Dubai winner is Henrik Stenson.
Add to that stellar European Tour career 3 Ryder Cup victories,
Henrik Stenson,
and an Olympic medal, and you quickly realize that Henrik plays his best when the stakes are the highest. And that was never more on display than in 2013, when he had a Hall of Fame career all in 1 year. But perhaps the most important step was the championship that got away.
Let's visit 2013. You got off to a great start that year, and then you went to Muirfield. You finished 2nd there. Was that frustrating, or did you feel like you were kind of on the rise?
I was happy to be in the mix of a major championship. I'd had some pretty good finishes in majors before, but I never really felt like I had a great chance of winning. At Muirfield, I was one of, I think, 4 or 5 guys hitting the turn that was in with a chance. And I made 1 or 2 mistakes, had a lip out on the 10th hole, I remember, and then made a bit of a soft bogey on 13, and that's kind of when I lost a little bit of that contention. Momentum. And then Phil just birdied 4 out of the last 6 holes to win it outright. And I think I birdied 17 and finished 2nd.
You had 8 top 10s that year, no wins going into the Deutsche Bank. But you were a couple of shots behind Sergio, I think, going into the last round. You end up winning. How'd that happen?
I remember we played together. There were some weather issues, and golf course played very soft, and I think I was pretty precise with my iron play and rolled the putts in, so I played some really good golf that time.
Stenson is indeed back, the Deutsche Bank champion 2013, and to the top of the FedEx Cup point standings.
And then you go to the Tour Championship, where you win wire to wire, only the 2nd person ever to do that. I mean, did you just feel you were in great shape from the beginning?
Yeah, I was in good form. That whole, like I said, I had a great number of tournaments. 3rd at the Scottish, 2nd at the Open. I had a 2nd at the WGC in Akron and the 3rd at the PGA. So already at the PGA Championship as well, I was in with a shot, and it didn't happen. And then winning in Boston, and just carrying on that momentum and that wave and confidence. So, I remember I was out with Tiger. He was 1st in the FedEx Cup. I was 2nd in Atlanta. We teeing off last on the Thursday, and I went out, and I think I played a bogey-free 6-under par at Eastlake, which is there's easy courses to do that around. So I played really well, and then just kept on keeping my foot on the pedal all the way to the end.
All the way to the FedEx Cup, as it turned out. That's a heck of a year.
Yeah, it was, absolutely. And I still went on to play some good golf in Europe and winning the DP World Tour Championship and won the race to Dubai on top of that.
The double-double?
That's certainly the best 6 months of golf that I've ever played. And, of course, I'm wishing for that to be able to happen again, but you can certainly not expect that. It was a great stretch and a great run I had.
You win in Dubai, going away from your good pal, Ian Poulter. You hit the shot of the year in that round as well. Tell me a little bit about that.
The story with Ian waving the towel on the 18 comes back to before we headed out. So I won the FedEx and we're standing here practicing and he was quite some ways behind me. We ended up with a little friendly wager that if he was going to catch me, because he was convinced he was going to catch me, I was going to be his butler for the day and all these things. And I gave him a 10-1 because I was quite a long ways ahead. And he plays on great golf and pushed me all the way to the end. And he's the one chasing me in the final at that point. That was great. I mean, I played a fantastic last round. It's not always the best shot that becomes a hole-in-one or the best shot that becomes shot of the year, but it was a very fitting finish to my best season ever, to roll it up to 3 feet and tap it in for eagle and win by 5 or 6.
Come on, wipe me down.
That's some serious motivation, though, not wanting to be Poulter's butler.
Yeah. That was probably as motivating as anything else in my whole life.
That'd be a tough day. You know the stuff he'd have you doing? You'd be polishing Ferraris. Yeah.
I'm sure he could come up with worse things than
that. Yeah, probably. How cool was it to be in the opening ceremony?
Yeah, it was Rio was an amazing experience for me, watching Summer and Winter Olympics growing up. It's pretty surreal to be part of that, to see the Olympics from the inside, and then, of course, to compete and do well as we managed to do. So I had a great experience in Rio and really looking forward to doing the same in Tokyo.
Was it a special feeling just being an Olympian?
Yeah, I mean, it's not like I'm walking around thinking, oh, I'm an Olympian, but just being part of the Olympic Games. Yeah. And I think growing up being a golfer, it was never in the back of my mind that I was going to be there one day. Yeah. Because up until 2012, it wasn't possible. No. That was the first time we got news that it was going to be in for the Rio Games. So it was never a dream or an aspiration to be in the Olympic Games because it wasn't an option.
What do you remember about that final round?
That it was not my day.
Yeah.
I think, I mean, when you look back, and I reflected on this afterwards, Justin hit a couple of wayward tee shots on 11 and 12, and he kind of got away with it, made some good scrambling pars. Then I think I managed to get ahead on 13, but at the tee shot on 13, I actually pulled my neck a little bit, and I had to
get
my physio out on the 14th tee box and try and adjust my tee spine, and I was all kind of locked up, and I hit two of the worst shots I hit for a long, long time on 14 and 15. So there's bad timing, and then there's really bad timing, and I think when the gold medal is supposed to be decided, to get a small injury problem at that time wasn't great. I kept on fighting and managed to get one back, I think, on 16, and then we were all squared for the last two holes.
Two to go, and they are tied up.
And Justin's tee shot on 17 just hung up on the edge. Would have been a tricky up and down if that had gone over the back, and then he had a great pitch shot onto the last to about 3 feet. I hit a poor approach shot and had to go for a long putt. The silver medal was mine and the gold was his.
For the first time in 112 years, there's a gold medalist in golf at the Olympics, and his name is Justin Rose.
If you're ever going to feel good about losing a gold medal, I guess losing it to a good friend is going to make it a little bit less painful, I guess.
Please welcome the medalists.
I think we showcased our sport really well. It was a great competition because it was tight all the way to the end. Matt came with a great final round to get the bronze medal. And looking back at the pictures, some of them, he almost seems to be more happy than Justin and myself.
Yeah, second sort of sucks a little bit, but when that silver medal is pretty cool. Where do you keep it?
It's in my office. Yeah. I think it's the worst looking medal of all time.
Yeah.
I don't say that as an offense to the Olympic Games and Rio. It's just my kids have had it to school. It's been dented. It's been a charity event. It's been, I mean, those three medals, the gold, silver and bronze from Rio in golf, they've been traveling the world quite a lot. They're the only three golf medals around. I guess it's been some extra focus on them due to that.
Well, 18 years as a pro, you've had wins all over the world, but you had that one box that was unchecked. Did you always think that you could win a major?
Yeah, I think I always felt like I had that in me for sure. But until you do it, you're not going to run around saying that, are you? You just better keep that to yourself and work hard, and hopefully the opportunity arises and you take it. And that certainly happened for me in 2016.
Talk a little bit about that final round battle, because people tend to look at it, you know, from the last round only. I mean, the third round was pretty amazing as well.
Yeah, no question. The match play, in my mind, started already on the back nine on Saturday. Phil made a birdie on 13 to get two ahead. Yeah! And at that point, I thought to myself, I got to stay with him. I can't let him get any further ahead. A player of his caliber with his record, if he gets to three or four ahead, it's going to be a very, very tough task tomorrow. And I managed immediately to bounce back on the 14th with a two-shot swing to take it back to square.
Birdie for Stenson, bogey for Mickelson.
And then on 17, another par three, I managed to get a two-shot swing again when I birdied and he bogeyed, and we both scrambled for par up the loss. So we, so from two down, standing on 13th green, I managed to walk off one ahead going into Sunday. And at that point, it felt like it was pretty much going to be between him and me.
On the tee from Sweden, Henrik Stenson.
Are you aware at the time that you're doing something really special, or is it just like one hole at a time?
I think I was just so focused on playing the best possible round. I put myself now in the position in a major championship. I'm up against one of the best players of all times, and I really need to go out there and give him my best shot. I think it helped mentally to a small degree that I'd been second before, I'd been third a couple of times. Really, the attitude was go out there and play my best possible round, and I certainly did that. And you're talking about being in the zone or being in the moment. When I came off the course and I'm looking at the scorecard and I see four birdies in the last five holes, I had not even reflected at that when I played it. And I think that's really the ultimate statement, that I was focusing on one shot at a time. I gave him my best.
One of those birdies was a 50-footer at 15.
51 foot.
51 feet, I beg your pardon.
Yeah. Don't shortchange me.
That was a loud noise when that one went in.
I mean, when I'm standing on the 14th, I hit a 6-iron, I think, into 15, 20 feet. We're all square, and I'm thinking to myself, Phil's never going to go away. He's not going to make mistakes that gives me this championship. If I want to win this, I need to make opportunities like this. And I drilled that putt in on 14 to go one ahead. And I don't think Phil felt that bad at the time. Then when I drained that one on 15, I think he probably felt like, I might be in trouble here.
I say so. How sweet it is.
When it's your week, when it's your tournament, you just have one or two breaks go your way and someone else might have it against them. And the eagle putt that Phil has on 16, that putt drops on 16, it might have been a different outcome, who knows.
We talked about the shot of the year on the European Tour, you know, at 3 wood to 6 inches. But for me, the shot you hit at 17 with a 4-iron was one of the finest shots I've ever seen. How did it feel to you?
The same way.
Yeah?
Yeah, it's funny when I look at the tapes, I stand up there and it's a full 4-iron into the wind, out of the left a little bit, and I just absolutely nuked this thing. It's one of the purest shots I've ever hit, I think, and it just like lasered at it.
Yeah.
And I only watched it take off, and then I walked to the side and give my caddy Gareth the club, and I think for someone just watching the broadcast, they probably felt, has he missed this one? And unfortunately, I didn't make the birdie, and Phil makes a great up and down for par, and it would have been a lot nicer to walk up the last with a 3-shot lead than a 2-shot lead.
Yeah, it sure would. And now on the last, I'm standing just off the fairway to the right, and I see this ball coming towards me and towards the fairway bunker, and it stops just short. Was your heart in your mouth?
A little bit. I couldn't see it. I thought from the tee box all the way in the back, I thought it was in the bunker.
That's the Greg Norman bunker back in 1989. That was put in just prior to the championship, and it
that
ended up being the undoing of the shark all those years ago. That was so close.
It wasn't until we walk off the tee and come up on one of the forward tees then I could see this little white egg short of the bunker, and I was sure happy to see that one.
Yeah. And what do you remember about the walk up the last?
It wasn't until I hit that wedge in the heart of the green.
Okay,
then I kind of felt pretty comfortable, but still Phil's putt from, he had a 50-footer on the loss, and that doesn't miss by much. So when you got three from 20 feet, then you're feeling pretty comfortable. That's when I let my guard down. Up until that moment, I was just all business. So I didn't really, I guess, have the chance to take that much in, but it's still an amazing walk. You got the grandstands on both sides. They're packed with people and all giving us the appreciation for the golf we played that week. So.
And then you make the putt?
Yeah, and then I make it. I don't know, it's for the Open Championship record.
Ties Jason Day's all-time major record at 20 under.
There's a really nice moment when Phil waited for Emma, you know, and gave her a hug. Yeah. That's pretty cool.
No, Phil's class act. He's always been that way. And what maybe not everyone knows was a conversation. We're playing at the US Open a month prior. I played really well in the morning round, and we're having a wait out on the golf course. And really nice of him, he says to me, you really got the game for major championships, and I think you're going to win one. And I'm joking back saying, well, as long as it's not on, at your expense.
Really?
And then a month later, that happened. So when I'm actually putting my arm around him on the 18th when we're walking off, I said, you remember the conversation? And he goes like, oh, yes, I do.
Did he? Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he played as well as he could. I think that was his take on it. That's the best golf I've ever played without winning a tournament. What might soften the blow a little bit was that he already had a claret jug from a few years prior, so.
And the champion golfer of the year is Henrik Stenson.
It's a little bit surreal when things like that happen, something you've worked hard for and practiced your whole life, and then it finally comes off. It's whether it's winning a claret jug or a green jacket or the gold medal at the Olympics, something very special when someone's dedicated themselves hard, as we all have done out on tour, and then they come off. It's certainly a moment to remember.
More Faherty will continue after a few words from our sponsor.
I'm not getting any younger, as my training coach loves to remind me, but I am getting more experienced. Farmers Insurance is about experience too, which is one reason why they support this show. Well, that and my debonair charm, I assume. So thanks to Farmers, and let's get back to it.
We are Farmers. Bum, 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 bum.
Okay, this is rapid fire, and, you know, fair warning, no matter how well you do, you're not going to win anything.
No, okay.
Somebody start a clock. What's the most useless hidden talent you have?
That I can finally make my way up onto a jet surfboard.
Oh, yeah, you can. Who spotted that? What movie can you watch over and over and not get tired of?
Dumb Dumber.
Oh, really? What three words would you use to describe yourself?
I am pretty.
You are. The best prank you've ever played on someone?
I bought this pen in a Chinese market.
Yeah.
And I walked around asking people for email addresses way back in the day, and they got a nice little...
You can light it up. What was the last movie that made you cry?
Well, it wasn't Dumb Dumber.
No, it couldn't have been.
I don't know why. I kind of get emotional when I watch movies on airplanes. Do you feel the same way?
I get emotional when I get on an airplane.
Okay.
These days, never mind the movie.
Okay. Yeah.
How many times did you fail your driver's test?
Twice on the written test, and then twice on the driving part.
Excellent.
I got some excuses, though, but I don't know if anyone wants to hear those.
Well, I mean, let's hear a couple.
Well, I was playing golf when I was supposed to study for the written test, so apparently you have to study before you take it.
Fair enough.
I think the instructor was a little evil the first time. We had this sign that you're not supposed to drive in, and it was hidden, and he kind of played me a little bit. And the second time, I guess I was just a bit hesitant.
If you had to be stuck at one age forever, what age would it be?
I guess that'd be right now.
Yeah, I thought that's what you were going to say. That's what I would say.
Yeah. No, for you, I'd go a little earlier.
A little earlier?
Yeah. Before the show started.
Well, anyway, time's up. You win nothing. Thank you for playing. Well, oftentimes during rapid fire, I'll ask a player, you know, boxers or briefs. But with you, I mean, you're one of the very few that actually know the answer to that because of 2009 at Doral.
Yeah.
How often do people ask you about that?
Yeah, every second week out on tour, I'd say, there's someone with a photo that they want signed.
And
that's the photo.
Yeah.
And I always look a little suspicious when it's middle-aged men who ask me that.
I'm
happy to sign it, and they keep on bringing that picture up. I'll keep on signing it.
Well, it was also in 2009 in Florida. You had a much better result. You go to Sawgrass. and pull one off there. You start the final round 5 back, but you win by 4.
I mean, before the final round at Troon in 16, the final round at Sawgrass in 09 was definitely my best performance on a single 18 holes, given the tournament that was on the line and how difficult that golf course played that day and how well I played. So it was, I rate that as my second best round of golf ever.
Yes. Henrik Stenson now to 11 under par and a 3-stroke lead.
And I started making birdies from the 7th hole, and I think I pretty much birdied every second hole all the way to the end, and I managed to win by 3 or 4, yeah.
They often refer to the Players' Championship as the 5th major. You know, you've won a major. How does it compare?
I'd say it's the toughest field you play all year, so yeah. I totally agree on that. Whether we want to make it a 5th major in the future or not, that's another debate, and I'm not sure if I'm the one to answer that.
Henrik Stenson, the first Swede to win the Players' Championship.
The prestige of winning that championship is one of my finer moments in my career. How well I played and the players I beat certainly ranks up there.
And you were in a hurry to get back home. From that event,
you've done your homework, haven't you?
Yeah.
Yeah. Apparently, they don't like when you're driving above 90 on I-95, even though you think 95 would match the interstate
no
number,
humor.
But no, absolutely not.
There's
so
no
I get pulled
humor.
Over. I had a lot of it was golf equipment and bags and stuff in the back, so I didn't see who was behind me. And obviously, this state trooper was following me for a little bit, and
yeah,
gave me the lights and pulled me over and. He saw I had the golf bags, and he said, "So, where are you coming from?" And I said, "Well, I've been up at TPC playing the players." And he said, "How did you do?" I said, "Oh, yeah, I did all right. I did pretty good." And he goes back, and he's taking forever. And I'm thinking, "Oh, I'm in trouble now. He's not coming back with my license." And eventually, he comes back. He said, "Yeah, I had my brother on the phone. He watched the final round, but I've given a few other people a ticket, and I feel like I have to give you one as well." And I thought, "Well, I can handle a ticket on a day like this."
So. Yeah.
Bring it on. So
yeah.
I got the speeding ticket and on my way.
If life gave you mulligans, is there any shot you'd like to take another crack at?
There's one round that I would have liked to play, and that would have been the 3rd round at the PGA in 16. Because I'm coming off the win at the Open. We're playing at Balter's Roll in New York. I shoot a couple of 68s or 69s the first 2 days. And the warm-up on that Saturday was phenomenal. I'm rolling it nicely on the putting green. I'm striping it on the range. And when I'm 15 minutes from tee off, the thunder rolls in and the day gets cold. And Sunday morning, 36 holes. And I kind of faded away a little bit on the back nine on that Sunday. But if there's one round I would have loved to play to see how it could have panned out, that would have been the one, because I was ready to go as you can be, and I never got the chance.
Mulligans in Life are presented by Farmers Insurance. They know a thing or two because they've seen a thing or two. You've played extensively both in Europe and here in America and around the world. How do they compare?
I think growing up mainly on the European Tour and playing more of a worldwide schedule, I think that helps you as a player. You have to travel sometimes many time zones and long distance and go and play professional tournaments in a different part of the world, different culture, different type of golf course and grass and all the rest of it. So I think you become probably more versatile as a player playing that schedule in the early part of your career. And then around 2005, 2006, I started getting into the majors and the big events and started playing more in America. You face different challenges. Some of the golf courses are certainly tougher and the green speeds are quicker and the undulations might be bigger as well. So it asks different questions depending on where you play. And I think as a worldwide player, I've been getting used to playing in all over the world, and I think that's helped me develop as a golfer.
Your first win in Europe was the 2001 Benson and Hedges. Does that seem like a century ago, or is it still pretty fresh in your mind?
No, probably only 50 years ago. Yeah, it does feel like a long time ago, and especially when you look at the pictures. I mean, the picture when I won the Challenge Tour in 2000, when I have a backwards beret, and it's certainly a babyface assassin on those ones.
Yeah. Well, you've won the one of the most prestigious tournaments in the world, the BMW International, in 2006 and 2016. How does it feel knowing that the first person to win that trophy was me?
I wouldn't say make it less of an achievement, but...
Well, thank you.
Did you win it twice, though?
No, but I led it till the 72nd hole when Azinger hooked one out of bounds, hit a German guy on the head, came back in, he made four and tied me, and then he beat me in the first hole of the playoff.
That's really unlucky.
I know.
I feel like I should give you a second win for that.
All right,
just on how unlucky you were, so...
I'll take it.
But it's nice to win it twice, yeah.
In 2015 at the Ned Bank, you used willpower, I think, to make a ball drop in the hole.
No, that's pretty funny. It just like comes down and you can see, hey, it's probably gonna go, and I just I went like that, and it just falls in. Someone even put like a little music and a flash to it or something.
I'm sure we will.
On a clip, yeah.
I don't think anyone deserved the birdie. That was it, and maybe that was what was meant to happen.
We'll talk about some of the caddies in your career. What was it like having Fanny on the bag? That doesn't sound right.
It sounds great.
Okay.
And she's great.
Yeah.
Kind of managed to pull her out of retirement, more or less. She had...
Yeah, that's right, she was.
As you know, she had done many, many years with Nick. I think she did 12 years with Nick, and she got the phone call and if she wanted to come out and caddy for me, and strangely enough, she said yes and came out, and we did five full years together. Had some great times.
I know that Fanny loves pinball. Did she hook you on it as well?
I have the Spider-Man pinball machine in my house.
Yeah.
And I got another one in Sweden. So yeah, she's had her influence.
At the US Open, you once posed with a fan who you'd beamed.
If I drop someone to the floor with an 8-iron, I only deserve to go down and lay next to him for the selfie. He was the one who asked, so he tried to get up. So he's trying to get up, and I'm, no, you better lay down. If you want to have this selfie, because that's what he asked for.
Right.
And I'm down on the ground with him. The swelling was like you put half a golf ball on his forehead. It was bad. But we checked up on him that evening. He was fine, and I've sent a little package saying sorry. And
that's cool.
He lives in San Francisco, so he's going to come out to the PGA Championship. So.
Oh, he's stalking you?
Yeah. No,
excellent.
No, I'm stalking him now. He needs to come out and watch some other players. Don't hit him.
How much do you love candy?
I like it a lot.
Yeah, me too.
A lot.
Yeah, like on average, like.
I try and stay away, but it's hard. Swedish candy is the best, though.
Oh, it is too. Yeah,
it's
and we're
really
not talking
good.
About Swedish fish here. That's not really a thing.
No, we have the Swedish fish at home, but... And
the Swedish version, Swedish fish?
Yeah, Swedish fish.
Mm.
Ice cream is... I'm weak for ice cream, too.
There's a bunch of it in the refrigerator in there, I noticed.
All right, I think we should wrap this up then.
Well, we're close. No. Yeah. Golf's a funny game. Tell us a funny story.
Well, there's a few funny stories. One involves a journalist. I'd done a phone interview with this gentleman. He's from Germany. And then we meet up in Shanghai a couple of months later, and we're going to play together in the Pro-Am. I thought it was a very violent practice swing it took.
Yeah.
Until the second one was equally as violent, and I figured that neither one of them were practice swings. And then he almost took his left foot out with the third one.
With the ball?
And I asked him if he's practiced a lot before this Pro-Am, and he said that he hadn't, and I could only agree. He got 1 point in Stableford.
1 point?
Yeah. But if you want to have a real fun one, and this show has been a lot about Ryder Cup, and Phil Mickelson's had his part,
yes.
So this story involves Phil. I don't know if he wants it on television.
Oh, who cares what he wants?
No. So we're playing together in 2008 at the WGC, the Bridgestone Invitational in Akron. And for whatever reason, Ryder Cup comes up. It's a couple of months out. And he says, you guys, make sure you're not sore losers now when you're going to lose at Valhalla. And I said, well, we're really scared because we only won in 02 or 04 or 06. So, yeah, we're really scared about this Ryder Cup. I don't know what I said. I said something that annoyed him a little bit. And he'd obviously had his major breakthroughs. He's won a couple of majors just beforehand. And he says, well, you guys, you're really good in the team event when you're hanging on to each other's but you need to start winning some individual stuff as well. So it's like, okay, we'll leave it at that. And I'm playing, so it's Phil Mickelson and Anthony Kim against Robert Karlsson and myself in the better balls. I hit it good. I'm in there close on a lot of holes. And Robert is a little bit further out, but his putter is on fire. So he's freewheeling it. He's got free goes the whole time. And he just keeps on draining one putter after another. I just rake my coin up. And after the 15th, on my way to the 16th tee box, there's a porter cabin. And I'm walking in, I get some relief. And when I open, Phil is on his way in. And I just look at him and give him a little wink. And I say, that's not a bad to hang on to, is it? And he cracked up because he remembered the conversation that we'd had. And I know he's told that story, but I thought it deserved to be in there.
Thank you for doing this.
Thank you.
My friend,
it's been
a while. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah, I had to chew on your ears for about 3 years to get on this show, right?
We couldn't get you. Too hard, too slippery. I think many people are surprised when they realize how much Henrik Stenson has accomplished on the course. He's sneaky good, but far more interested in pulling a joke on a friend than he is on having the spotlight on himself. But I hope this show has given you a glimpse of what I've long known. Henrik Stenson is laugh out loud funny, scratch your head smart, and a hell of a golfer. Thanks for joining me, Fegarty fans. You can find more of the Fegarty podcast presented by Farmers Insurance on Fegarty.com and your favorite podcast provider. Go to Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Art19, or Google Play. Search Fegarty and subscribe. If you love the show, and why wouldn't you? Be sure to leave a rating, review, and tell your friends.